Hey, welcome to That's My Purse Podcast, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason, or Jay.
And I'm Jimmy.
So Jimmy, how was your past week?
Pretty short week. I went to a convention this past weekend, so that was pretty cool. Cons are kind of starting back up again, so Eric Estrada was there, so that was kind of cool.
What was he trying to? Was he like his character? I don't even remember the show. His character from Chips, or was he just kind of there?
I think he was just kind of there. I don't know him from Chips. I never watched Chips before. I only know him as Eric Estrada cameos in different shows he's been in.
I feel like Chips was his original like breakout role. I could be wrong, or like the one he's most like, you know, every actor is most known for a role, or maybe two or three roles, even if they have a wide IMDb list. I feel like that's his number one known role, but I could be wrong. It's not like I'm a big Eric Estrada follower.
Yeah. Even though I've never seen Chips, I always imagine him with like the police uniform on and the motorcycle helmet. How was your weekend?
Not too shabby, all things considering. Dog and I went on a long walk. We wound up going for a walk, and then I was like, okay, cool, we're at the end, let's turn around. And then I realized I wound up going the wrong direction, so we just wound up walking even further. But it was a nice day, so it was fun. And then a friend from Austin is visiting here in San Francisco, so that's been pretty fun. I think, gosh, it's been maybe three and a half years since he's been visited, since he has visited me here. So that's
nice. Yeah. San Francisco is an amazing city. I need to come up and visit you. I love San Francisco mm-hmm. a lot.
It is a nice city. Gorgeous too. I mean, obviously just like any other city in the world, there's downsides to it. There's upsides, but overall, like anytime I take a walk around the city and get like one of those hill views where I'm looking across the town and seeing the ocean and the mountains and stuff, it's just some of the best views you'll see.
Yeah, there's not too many views in Austin. I mean, you can climb up to views, but just kind of looking around, not much to see. Buildings, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, I guess as somebody who grew up in San Antonio where there were almost no worthwhile views, Austin definitely seemed like a step up. But I guess as somebody who grew up in Austin or spent most of your time there, it doesn't
seem
that
interesting. I mean, it's no Colorado. I love Colorado a lot. Like, you just look around and the mountains in the back, I always kept thinking it was fake.
Yes, I could do a whole podcast just on, like, the best views in the world, probably. There's just so many good places.
Is that the next podcast? Like the Vista podcast, just vistas around.
Yeah, we'll call it Scenic View or Scenic Vista Pod or something like that. Granted, I haven't been everywhere in the world, but I think I've been to enough places that I could probably fill like a 55-episode podcast just talking about nice views.
Yeah, it would encourage you to go out more, travel more, different places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the thing about the views I've noticed, or at least when it comes to me, I don't know about you, but whenever I look at a picture of something, like even if it was a photo I took or a photo a professional photographer took, it always pales in comparison to the real thing. Like, I'll show friends pictures of me like hiking in Sapa, Vietnam, and I'm like, yeah, this picture doesn't do it justice. It looks so gorgeous in real life.
Yeah, looking at a picture, it never seems the same. But in that sense, I do love having my own pictures, though, because you remember it. Like, I bet when you look at the picture, you don't see the picture. You see the memory of being there mm-hmm. and seeing it in real life.
Yes, when I look at the picture, it like triggers the memory, and I can kind of remember the view. And then I'm like, oh, it was so great. And then you're talking to your friend like, oh, man, this picture just doesn't do it justice. It is just gorgeous.
Man, did Japan have a lot of good views? I know you've been there a couple times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a mountainous country. So if you go to, like, I have not done Mount Fuji. It has been on my list forever. Maybe the next time I finally go to Japan, I'll do it. But, like, you know, there's a lot of mountains. So I've gone to Nagano and I've gone to Hakuba and done, like, skiing there. So there's a lot of great views of the Hakuba Valley. And you can go up to, you know, there's scenic towers. So, like, you can go up to Sky Tree, which I believe is the tallest point in Tokyo. There's also a Pokemon store there. But you can go up there and get a good view of the entire city. You know, if you want to just kind of see nature and stuff, there are a lot of mountains that you can climb and see that. Kyoto, just on the ground level, Kyoto has amazing views, especially during cherry blossom season. There's not enough words to describe how nice it looks.
Man, I can't wait till we get to the Japan trip episode. I'm sure you got some insight on that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't spend a lot of time in Japan. Or they spend time in Japan, but, like, not in the streets. But there's some of the stuff that's pretty interesting when you see the episodes. And I'll definitely share some stories that, like, resonated with me when I saw the episode. And then was actually in Japan, and I was like, oh, yeah, the rooms are small and just random stuff like that. But yeah, it was an overall good weekend, and then I'm going to go skiing this weekend again just to do it, you know, get my money's worth out of my ski pass.
Oh man, I've never skied before. I'm not much of a snow guy as a Texan. I appreciate the snow, and if I'm in snow, I'll touch it. But I prefer to be out of snow.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even start skiing until I hit my 30s. Like, I was really, well, and when it comes to skiing, I guess a late bloomer, because I guess, you know, it seems like almost everybody I know who skis or snowboards, they started in, like, their mid-teens at the latest, or maybe in their early 20s when they were in college and a bunch of friends went on a ski trip and stuff. It's like, I didn't ski until I was close to 30 was when I first started skiing.
Oh, man. Yeah. Ski. I mean, maybe I need to go skiing. Maybe you'll take me skiing one time. I'll head over there, and we'll give it a try.
It is a fun hobby. It is a very fun way to just spend a day, especially with friends. If you like kind of going down mountains and whatnot. If you go to a nice resort or a nice nice mountain, you can get really amazing views. Like the views in Vail are really nice. There's some places that don't have great views, but I guess anything's decent. Like, even the worst view is probably all right.
Yeah, I mean, mountains always look awesome.
Yes, that is the nice thing about being here in California, is the mountains. That's the one thing I wish Texas had. Now, granted, Austin does have, like, the hills and the hill country, and I guess it's not the same as mountains, but it's something.
I mean, it is elevated land, so I'll take what I can get, I guess.
Yes. Speaking of hills, maybe we should talk about King of the Hill. Do you like that segue?
I think it was appropriate and enjoyable.
Awesome. Every once in a while, I get a good one. Sometimes I do terrible segues, and it's like, what were you thinking? But yeah, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. So we're going to pick up where we left off last week, where we talked kind of about the show, our love of the show, talking about the city of Arlen, talking about the actual Hill family, and we're going to talk about some of the other major characters who aren't the Hill family, which are largely their neighbors, like the Grillbulls, Dotrieve, Boomhauer, Supanus and Phones, and then, of course, good old Buck Strickland, Hank's boss that he borderline worships. So, yeah, let's go ahead and jump into it. And I think we should start with the good old Dale Gribble, also known as Rusty Shackleford. He is an interesting character. So it's very hard to describe him because of how he behaves. He is very neurotic, to say the least. He is a hardcore conspiracy theorist. And this was before, like, conspiracy theories were a bit more mainstream like they are today. Like, he has some just out there crazy ones, like the Cuban stealing his lawnmower to assassinate Castro and stuff like that. he is just, he's out there with his beliefs. He believes in aliens. He always thinks that he's talking to them. He is an exterminator by trade. He owns his own business, but he constantly refers to the fact that he doesn't actually make a living wage. He is a gun fanatic. He's actually the president of his gun club. He's a chain smoker, and he's a quote-unquote licensed bounty hunter. Really, he just went to like a afternoon course on how to become a bounty hunter, and now he calls himself one. And yeah, he is a very interesting character. He along with some of the other neighbors we'll talk about later, grew up with Hank as far as I want to say second grade. They've known each other. So they've been longtime friends, and they went ahead and became neighbors. As they started to get older, they decided to all kind of move onto the same street and be next to each other. He's always seen wearing a ball cap. I believe it's like a Mack truck ball cap. He's always smoking Manitoba cigarettes. And he is the type of person who doesn't trust the government and doesn't trust anybody. So he always uses the alias Rusty Shackleford for like everything he does. He's always wearing these sunglasses too. The big reflective ones. So you can never really see his eyes unless he takes them off. It's hard to describe him because he's just super bizarre, like compared to a lot of other people in the show. He is very very neurotic, very erratic. Any other thoughts about him?
I guess whenever I think about Dale Gribble, I think about, and I don't think we're going to talk about this episode, but how he wants to be a basket weaver.
Yes.
Like some of his other hobbies that he enjoys that we find out kind of through everything. He was the towel boy for the football team, and he takes it very, very seriously. And I think I'm going to have this with all the characters, but I love all the side characters, but I also hate all the side characters. They do. Oh, everyone does something that's going to annoy you a lot. Well, maybe not one of these guys, and I'll say that when we get to that person.
Yeah.
But for a majority of these people, they have flaws. Oh, maybe two now that I'm re-looking at this list. But, yeah, Dale's just that friend who is just out there and crazy, and you love him, even with all his eccentricities. Because the group kind of, they're never like, that's stupid, Dale. How can you believe that conspiracy theory? Or like, aliens aren't here. They're just like, well, you enjoy your night with the aliens, or we're not going to go out to the grassy knoll this weekend. They're very supportive of him in a sense.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. They do support or enable him in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, he is kind of the anti-Hank, if you will. Just in the sense that everything Hank is good at, Dale sucks at. So, you know, he's not athletic. He is not good with tools, repairing things, anything like that. He's not a hard worker in the same way Hank is. But then he seems to be pretty decent at things that Hank isn't good at. So, like, a lot of non-manly, for lack of a better term, hobbies he is great at. Like, he breeds turtles. He's able to cook macaroons and cookies and whatnot. So he's able to do things Hank can't do. He's definitely suffering from something. I want to say like paranoia or something like that. He also, I think he's been in almost every episode. Most of these people we're going to talk about have been in a significant portion of the episodes. He is just, it's so weird. He's bizarre, but he's also one of those characters you can't help but love because he's so bizarre. Like, we find ourselves quoting a lot of his random phrases that he says in the show, like when he yells pocket sand at somebody, I'll randomly quote that, and, you know, sha-sha-sha. He has all those fun, a lot of the funniest sayings in the show came out of his mouth, really.
Yeah, I always love that he knows. Dale always knows what everyone's up to somehow. I mean, maybe he has got cameras in everyone's house. Who knows? But Dale kind of always knows where everyone is.
Oh, he definitely does have camera, at least in some people's houses, because there's some episodes where you can see that he's like monitoring Bill from his basement and everything.
Yes, and like, I don't know. I would love to see how Dale met Nancy, because Nancy is an I never picture them together, or I want to see that story come to be. Maybe for the reboot.
Maybe they'll do a flashback once the reboot gets, well, first I guess they need to approve it. It seems like it's going to happen, but nobody has said yes yet. But yeah, speaking of Nancy, I guess we could jump into his wife, who is, well, she's an interesting character herself. So Nancy Gribble, or Nancy Hicks Gribble, is the weather girl, or she was the weather girl, rather, in the earlier episodes. That about halfway through the series, she becomes the anchor for the local news station, Channel 84. She's Dale's wife and Joseph's mother. Joseph is somebody we'll talk about a little later. She is probably, arguably, the most attractive woman on the street. How Dale and her wound up together is way beyond me. She's very, just, I don't know, she's very... It's one of those women who's like, she's pretty and she knows she's pretty. She definitely uses her attractiveness to get some things, and even uses it to kind of talk down to Peggy and some of the other people in the show. She is... We don't see too much of her. She's well, when we do see her, it's a lot of the same stuff. There's not a ton of depth to her character, I would say, compared to some of the others. But she does provide a lot of interesting. She does provide a lot of interesting background. She is definitely the money maker. She is definitely the money maker of the family. Like, there's no way Dale, even by his own admission, he doesn't earn a living wage. So there's no way he's taking care of himself. She even says that she's the money maker of the family, and that she supports the family in a few episodes. She is definitely very catty and very, you know, I want to rule the world, or I want to get on the top, and wants to, I guess, be a huge media personality is her goal. Like Arlen, even though she's been doing it for like 15 years or 20 years in Arlen, Arlen's still just a stepping stone to her getting that big break and going to the big city or whatever. But yeah, she's pretty... I mean, she's an interesting character. We'll talk a little bit later about her affair, but one of the running jokes in the show is that she has been, I don't even know if I want to say secretly, but she's been having an affair with the character John Redcorn for the past 13 some odd years. And everybody knows it except for Dale. Though there is a fan theory out there that Dale is aware of it and he just lets it go because he knows that Nancy is providing for him, and if he gets mad, he can lose everything. I don't know how I feel about that fan theory, but it is one of the more sad part of the shows, the fact that Dale just never catches on to the fact that Nancy is cheating on him. But yeah, and then also their son, Joseph, who we'll talk about too, he's John Redcorn's son, biologically, but legally Dale's son. And Joseph doesn't even really look like Dale. He looks more like John Redcorn, like even with skin tone and everything. But Dale is none the wiser. Do you have any thoughts on Nancy?
Well, I have thoughts on Dale, but if we're going to go to Nancy, I do remember that Nancy does say, or... I believe Dale asked Nancy for some more money in his allowance, because do believe Nancy gives him an allowance, because Dale is, I don't think, the best with money.
No, he is not. Makes me wonder how much weather people make in making Heimlich County, because it's like, man, because he's not bringing home anything, and we see a lot of episodes where he spends a lot on stupid stuff.
I think she's been there for a long time at the weather place, and we also get to see, I think this happens in later seasons, where you see this more, I don't want to say cunning side to Nancy, but maybe she uses her powers for evil more than good. Mm-hmm. I would say, to get her way. She uses her beauty and looks to manipulate people, but it's kind of like this weird, like, smartness that she has, that she can, like, manipulate people, not just with her looks, but with things she does, and mm-hmm. tries to get everyone to in a certain position so that she can rise up.
Exactly. She is very cunning, more so in the later episodes too, not so much in the early ones. It's almost like so at some point during the series, Dale and Nancy get back together. Not that they were never together beforehand, but it was clear that they had like a very bad marriage, or at least to what many people would consider a bad marriage. They even mentioned that they sleep in separate bedrooms and everything like that. But then at some point, they rekindle their relationship. Nancy stops seeing John Redcorn, and, you know, it kind of becomes a more traditional marriage in that sense. But then at the same time, we also see a character change. It might be related, might not be related. Maybe it was just like, oh, well, now that she's not seeing John Redcorn, we need to do something else to make her interesting. Maybe the writers thought. But yeah, she becomes more cunning after that, and always has like plots to try to get ahead. I mean, she's an interesting character. There's just not a lot of stuff to her.
I do like that Nancy truly loves Dale at the end of the day. And you can see that Dale truly loves Nancy. And that's why I think, you know, Dale is oblivious to the affair. Just because he's so in love with her, and he thinks that she could manipulate anyone, but she would never do it to me, or she would never hurt me. So I feel like there's that love there. And then we see in a later episode, I don't know if it's on our list, but, you know, their love is kind of put to the test, and it overcomes.
Yeah, they do pretty well overall. But yeah, Nancy definitely is a big part of the show though, and shows up in a good portion of episodes. Now I can jump over to their son, Joseph, or Joseph John Gribble, who is Bobby's best friend because, well, they're neighbors, they're next door neighbors, so that kind of helps. They've probably known each other since they were kids. And he took an interesting turn once he hit puberty. I don't know if that was intentional by the writers, or if it just kind of happened and they ran with it, like maybe one episode, or they made him goofy, and then the remaining episodes, people were like, oh man, people really like that. Let's just keep making him goofy. Pre-puberty, he's pretty normal 12-year-old boy. He's just, you know, likes getting into trouble, likes doing kind of 12-year-old boy things. When he hits puberty, you know, puberty just like hits him hard. He grows a bunch. He has like a little mustache. Voice gets deeper. I think they even got a different voice actor for him, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, he's just, he is a completely different character, and he becomes very, very awkward, but he's also very, very athletic. Though I think even when he's pre-pubescent episodes, he's very athletic. Like, he's always the best one on the football team and everything. So that's like a big part of his character. And in times it seems like Hank likes, I guess, Joseph a little more than Bobby, just because he can relate better to him, because Joseph is definitely more sports related. But then, of course, the awkwardness and the weirdness of him really, I think, screws with Hank and makes Hank want to kind of stay away. He's got a few interesting episodes. He always just says really weird things all the time. You know, I don't know. You know that weird kid we all knew in high school or middle school who just would say the most offlandish, or sorry, the most outlandish things. And heck, it might have been you. Who was it? Who knows? It's like if you're sitting there thinking there was no weird kid in my high school, that was probably you. Yeah, he that's exactly who he is. Just the weirdest kid who says all the weird stuff. And yeah. Any thoughts on Joseph?
Yeah, I was just looking at his thing, and I did not know that the voice actor changed. But for the first, before he hits puberty, it's Brittany Murphy voicing him. And then after, it's Brecken Myers.
Nice, yeah. Brittany Murphy, who also did Luann.
Yeah, I did not know that. That's interesting. That's going to change everything when I rewatch some of these episodes. I like his dynamic with Bobby. They're kind of... We see episodes where they do fight, and then they kind of stop being friends for a little bit, but at the end of the day, they always have each other's backs. It's very like Hank and Dale's relationship, where they get into these scuffles, but at the end, they kind of... They know that they're there for each other, and that's kind of Bobby and Joseph, because Bobby and Joseph are also two different ends of the spectrum, where Joseph is... super athletic. I guess it's like Joseph has the qualities Hank wants in Bobby. And I feel like Dale would respect the qualities that Bobby has just because he's eccentric too. But it all kind of, everything works out for Joseph and his kind of little adventures he goes on with Bobby. So he's a fun kind of sidekick to have.
Yeah, I do like him as a character. Sometimes the weird things he says, like I'm looking at some of his quotes where he says, okay, here we go. We got one where he's like, hey, let's go into the girls' locker room and stand where naked girls have stood. So clearly just a boy going through puberty, raging hormones, but then also kind of discovering stuff. And he's just like, he's just such a goofball, but he is a good foil. Like, he is a good companion to Bobby. That is true. He and Bobby are seen in a lot of episodes, and they're working together on projects or, you know, playing games, video games, trying to figure out things, little schemes that, you know, 13-year-old boys go through. So he's definitely a good companion to Bobby, and he's really fun to deal with.
Yeah, he's great, and just, like, I'm looking at another one of his quotes where he says, we should pee in places where pee isn't supposed to go. These are great. I would want a friend like this. Just, it would amuse me. I feel like, I'd be like, yes, you're right. We should do that.
Exactly. Now, to get, now that we're talking about Joseph, we can probably talk about his biological father, in John Redcorn. John Redcorn is he had two voice actors, and I believe it's because his first voice actor actually passed away, sadly. But he is a licensed New Age healer. He is very, very well built and attractive, so it kind of makes sense why women like him and why Nancy has been with him for 13 years. He is also Native American. That is kind of one of his big traits, I guess you could say. It comes up a lot in the show. It is even like kind of a running gag that whenever he talks about Native American things or anything sacred, all of a sudden like a wind blows through his hair. So it's kind of a funny little thing. He lives in a little homesite trailer. He's very proud of his culture, which is great. You know, we don't see a lot of that with Native representation in general. So it's nice to see that he is somebody who's definitely in touch with his roots and not really making it super, I guess, bizarre. I don't know if that's the word I want to use. I don't feel like they're making fun of his culture in the show. He is with Nancy for a long time. Eventually they split up and she starts to kind of befriend Dale, which is a little weird. because, well, Dale went ahead. I mean, just knowing the history of Dale and John Redcorn and Nancy and stuff, you would think Dale wouldn't want to befriend him. But of course, Dale doesn't know anything, and Dale just wants to be helpful. So, like, John Redcorn at one point is trying to sue the U.S. government for some of his tribe's land, and Dale is helping him doing the Freedom of Information Act request and all the stuff. And so John Redcorn starts to see Dale as a true friend. Joseph does not like him at all. Joseph sees him as just a weirdo, like the weird guy in the neighborhood. But of course, John Redcorn wants to have an actual relationship with Joseph, since it is his biological son. He does have a few other children, or at least we know of one other children who's revealed, one other child who's revealed in a later episode in the later seasons. He's been a pretty interesting character. He drives a Jeep. He always plays like 80s metal. He was a roadie for the band Winger, apparently, in one episode he reveals. And he is a lead singer of a metal band called Big Mountain Fudge Cake. So we see that a few episodes. Any other thoughts on John Redcorn?
Well, he's he was the lead singer of Big Mountain Fudge Cake, and then he's now a children's performer.
Yes, that's right. There was an episode where he discovers that he has some kind of talent for making kids songs, and so he becomes like a, you know, like a Raffy or whatever. He goes to kids' parties and plays music for them.
Yeah, so I think John Redcorn's, I wouldn't say he bores me sometimes when he comes on things, but John Redcorn is hit or miss for me if I'm going to enjoy the episode or not. Because he's more of a stoic guy. He's, you know, the jokes are kind of just, either he's making fun of someone or they're just kind of dry humor. So he's a very interesting character to have around. I do enjoy him always trying to have a relationship with Joseph, but respecting Nancy and Dale and not just coming out and saying, like, that's my son and I want him to do these things.
Yeah. There's been a few episodes where he tried, but then there was always something like stopped him. Like he couldn't bring himself to do it, which is nice that he doesn't go all the way with it. He does have a few good one-liners, though, that like I find myself quoting. Like every Thanksgiving, I'll use the one quote he does in the one of the Thanksgiving episodes where they ask, like, hey, John Redcorn, do your people even celebrate Thanksgiving? And he responds, we did once. So, yeah, he does have a few really good one-liners. There's not much to him. Like, we pretty much described everything about him. He is very, like him being a Native American is definitely a huge part of his persona. Him cheating on Nancy, being, like, very attractive. Him cheating with Nancy, rather, and then being very attractive and all the women like him and being, like, buff guy. His whole New Age healing thing where he's giving people massages and whatnot. Yeah, that's pretty much his character. And then, of course, his love for 80s music. Let's see. We can go on to our next neighbor. When, you know, we're talking about a womanizer, a guy who's good with the women. I think this is a good person to go to from John Redcorn, and that is Boomhauer. Now, Boomhauer is kind of an enigma, but he shows up in almost every episode. So it's really hard to pin him down because he doesn't say much. Like, the running joke for the show is that he kind of speaks in this borderline mumbling voice that even with closed captioning, it's kind of hard to still listen to him. But he is definitely a character. That is definitely the biggest part of his character, is that he always speaks in this just really bizarre, like, West Texas accent that the average person couldn't understand. He loves cars. He has I forget what kind of car it is. Not a Mustang, but he has a very sportsy car. There's even an episode where he does like a race for he's a pace car for NASCAR. So he is he definitely loves his car. He drives a 1968 Dodge Coronet. There we go. He had a mid-60s Mustang called Miss Sally that winds up getting, we learned that it gets driven into a gorge by Hank and friends when they were in high school, and they kind of covered it up, which is its own problem. We might be covering that episode later, so we don't want to go too much into it. He seems to have a pretty good relationship with Hank. I would argue that of Hank's three best friends, Boomhauer is probably the most level-headed of them all. He doesn't really say much, but he apparently has very profound words. Like, if you actually slow down what he says or read the closed captioning of stuff, you see that he actually has a lot of good stuff to say. And then, of course, he's a womanizer. Like, that's just kind of a big part of his character. He's always trying to pick up different women, and we see many episodes where, like, you know, a woman's leaving his house in the morning or something like that. So, but overall, he's kind of the, maybe not so much in the same way Hank is, but he is definitely like one of the anchors for the group, in the sense that he is very level-headed and whatnot.
Yeah, Boomhauer is one of my favorites. And when I was saying that there's some characters that don't upset me, Boomhauer is definitely one of them. He's always full of sage advice, even though I don't understand what he's saying. And He's got so many just crazy stories. Boomhauer's lived an interesting life. I guess there must have been some small time where in between high school and now where Boomhauer has been on so many adventures, or maybe he goes off on these side quests every now and then, like when he surfed. I love the episode of Boomhauer surfing. I think he is a womanizer. He loves to get around, but I do think I was going to take that back. I was like, he treats them very nicely. But sometimes he just ghosts people.
Yeah.
After he hooks up with them. But I don't know if we're going to cover the episode where we find out how he gets so many women. We are?
Right, oh, I don't know if we're going to cover that one, but we're definitely going to cover the episode where he gets a dose of his own medicine.
Oh, yeah. But if we don't cover the episode where we find out how he picks up everyone, I'm sure one of us will mention it in another episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. He reveals his quote-unquote secret to Bobby, and it's not much of a secret. You know, we never know what he does for a living throughout the entire series. Like, they never mention it until the very last episode. And even then, it's still debated amongst fans if it's real or not. Because in the very last episode, you see him put his wallet down, and then it mentions that he's a Texas Ranger, which is essentially like, for people not familiar with Texas, think of it as like the state FBI or something like that.
I think it's real because I believe we will be talking about this last episode, but everything that happens at the end of that episode seems to be like the truth. We see like Dale and Nancy, a lot of different scenes of all our characters, and everyone's kind of, it's like the way they end the series, I think, is perfect for King of the Hill.
Yeah.
So when we get there, I'll express my opinions about that, because it is on the list.
I know there's definitely, I've read it on like Reddit and whatever, and there's been some YouTube videos where people say that it's a fake badge and he's using it to pick up women. Who knows? I tend to lean to the fact that it might be real. I don't know. That just doesn't seem like something that they would do in the last episode. But who knows? Maybe we'll find out in the reboot. I guess we can now round out Hank's friends, his neighbors, who are also his friends, with Bill Dauterive, or more appropriately, Sergeant William Fontaine de la Tour Dauterive. But of course, Bill Dauterive is what we all know him as. But he does bring up his full name quite often. He is Hank Hill's overweight, lonely, and simple-minded friend. And he is like, pathetic is kind of, it's kind of being polite, honestly. He is just a very depressing person. Like, I remember years ago watching the show, and I was talking to a friend, and I was like, yeah, my life goal is to make sure I don't become Bill. So, you know, Bill, one of his big things is that he, you know, he was married to a woman named Lenore who left him and cheated on him quite often, it sounds like, from some of the stories. I think we only ever see her once in the entire series. So, you know, she's referred to a lot, though. He is overweight. He is balding. He's always just wearing kind of like a wife, a white wife beater outside, blue jeans, work boots. He is a sergeant barber in the Army. He grew up in Louisiana, and I guess he moved to Texas sometime in, I would say, high school at least, because he and Boomhauer and Hank, and I guess by extension Dale, because he was the town manager, played football in high school. Bill was known as like the Bill Dozer. It's like the best defensive character, or best defensive player. He does date a few times in the show, and it's really kind of depressing because they never work out for one reason or another. We'll probably go into greater detail in the actual episodes, but you know, either the woman winds up being crazy or dangerous or is using him, or just something else happens to where she doesn't want to date him anymore. Though there were a few places where she was just like written out of the story and we have no idea what happened to her. Bill has a not so secret crush on Peggy, but of course Peggy is disgusted by Bill, so nothing happens there. And let me see, in terms of the other friends, we don't see Boomhauer hanging out with Bill a lot, unless it's all four of them together. But we often see Dale and Bill like working together, and usually Bill is dragged into a lot of Dale's schemes. Bill has very low self-esteem, so he can easily be manipulated into doing whatever. Any thoughts on Bill?
Bill's the friend you want to have. That true, loyal, stand by your side, no matter what kind of friend. And we see in flashbacks that he was that kind of friend even before he became the Bill we know today. Because we see episodes where he protects Hank when they get drunk from bullies or bar people. I also think that sometimes Bill is underestimated, because he's actually like extremely good at what he does, whether it be cutting hair or making amazing barbecue, which is not cooking, according to Hank. It's a different thing.
Yes, we have to be clear on that. Cooking and barbecuing are two different things. But yeah, he does have a lot of talent. Like, he is a great barber. And he is a great cook. The few episodes we do see him cook, he does a great job doing it. I guess it's hard to say. Like, Hank definitely really cares about Bill's well-being, but you can also tell Hank gets annoyed with having to deal with him because he is super needy. Like, he will want to come over and eat dinner or hang out with them or whatnot. He will make excuses to be around them because he just doesn't want to be alone. So he'll just make up stories about, oh, I had to be at the airport to pick up my uncle. What a coincidence. I'm here with you guys. And stuff like that. So, he is a sweet guy. He's just very socially awkward. And I they allude to the fact, that it has to do with his terrible childhood upbringing and then his marriage having like broken him as a human being. But other than that, he is, I think he's still a sweet guy.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't want Bill to live next door to me, but I wouldn't mind hanging out with him a couple of times a month.
Yeah. And he is also just not, it's funny because you see the juxtaposition, like when he's younger, when you see him and he's younger and he's in football, you know, he's like star athlete and stuff. Even when he first gets into the military, he's just this built man. And then now he's just kind of a heavy, overweight guy and not taking care of himself and has no confidence. And it's also funny because there are episodes where you see like in his head or how he views himself, and he views himself as being fatter and balder than he actually is. So that kind of shows his self-esteem. But there have been episodes where he has had positive self-esteem, and so that was always nice. But yeah, he is a very interesting character, and there will be a lot of episodes covering him or that have his side stories. Let's see. Any other things you want to bring up about Bill?
Man, I'm sure we got a lot to talk about Bill, but I think we got quite a few Bill episodes on our list, so he's not going to not show up.
Exactly. Now we can go to the Super Nuisance Phone family. We can get through these people really quick because they don't play, like, there's not a lot to them. They're in the majority of episodes, but their characters are pretty straightforward. They're a Laotian family who moves next door to the hills pretty early, like midway into season one. So they're there for the majority of the show. You have Con, Min, and Connie, or Con Jr., who's the daughter. In some ways, they're doing a lot of the Asian stereotypes. I mean, they definitely are doing the Asian stereotypes in a lot of ways. But then also there's just some things about their character traits that I don't necessarily think have anything to do with their Asianness. So, like, they're definitely, Con, the husband, and Min are definitely the overbearing parents to Connie, wanting her to practice violin all the time, get perfect grades in school so that she could one day go to Harvard or whatever. It's clear as you go through the show that Con and Min, more so Con, but probably Min to some extension too, are very insecure. They live paycheck to paycheck, but they really want to be seen as high class, high social life and whatnot. They're always trying to scheme to get into this exclusive country club called Nine Rivers. But, you know, they're not in that class, so to speak, to get there. Con is the annoying neighbor. Con is always trying to get under Hank's skin and brag about what kind of money he has, the better job he has, how much better his income is. And it's kind of funny because it doesn't really faze Hank. Hank doesn't really care, but he'll always do that. Min's kind of the same way. Min doesn't really work. I don't really think we ever see her working, so she's mainly at home. But she gardens, and she's kind of catty with the other women in the neighborhood. She can be pretty, I guess, annoying as well. Not as bad as Con. Though Con is one of those weird characters you love to hate. He has like zero respect for Hank as a human being. But at the same time, there's like this odd respect for Hank that he has. I think they are actually intentionally made to be like two sides of the same coin. It's even kind of there in the fact that their names are anagrams for each other, Hank and Con. So whereas Hank's a hardworking guy, and he's kind of working class, but he's fine with it. He likes himself and he likes his life and he enjoys his house and he takes pride in where he lives and the truck he drives and stuff. Con is always trying to keep up with the Joneses and look more important. I think a lot of it is because of the fact that it's alluded that he was more or less middle or lower class when they were in Laos. And his wife, Min, came from a pretty well-to-do family. I mean, her father was a general in the army there and stuff. So, you know, she was really high class and stuff. And I think there's a small part of him that thinks he's not good enough to have Min. So that's a really quick overview on Khan and Min. Do you have anything to add on them?
They're fun side characters. Like most of these people we talked about, they're fun side characters that kind of give us some kind of interesting different point of view for Hank and Peggy to interact with, just having them as neighbors.
It is kind of funny that they are all neighbors. Like, they all live on the same street, but somehow Khan and Min think that they're above everybody else. Like, they talk down to them and call them stupid rednecks and everything, even though it's like, your house is probably worth the same as everybody else's, so I don't know why you're acting all high and mighty.
True. Yeah, but they do, they're always up to something, those two. Trying to get ahead, but at the end, they are really a part of this community, this street, because they do work together a lot. When someone attacks the street, they're a part of it, so they come together with Hank and everyone.
Absolutely. So the Hills definitely, and pretty much the entire Rainy Street neighborhood, sees the Super Nuisance Phones as one of them. Connie has a little bit more depth to her than Khan. Not so too much, definitely more depth than Min. Connie is their daughter. She's Bobby's age. She kind of fits the Asian stereotype. I think that's purposely what they're doing in the show. In a lot of ways, she does the stereotype of the fact that she's always getting A's. She's thinking about going to an elite school like Stanford or Harvard or whatnot. And then she also plays the violin. She practices it all the time. And her father and mother pretty much push her to do it. It's kind of hinted at the fact that it's kind of part of their own social climbing. Like, they figure, oh, if we have a daughter who does really well, then that means that we're really good parents. And I think that's kind of where their headspace is. And so they push her. It's clear from a few episodes that she's not really all that interested in doing a lot of the stuff. Like, she likes the violin, but she doesn't feel the need to practice it 100 hours a day or whatever. I think she also just wants to have fun. And, you know, Bobby and her are in a relationship of... They start off as friends and they get in a relationship, then they break up, then they're friends again. Then it seems like every once in a while it's like, oh, what is it? It's like on and off again relationship. I'm honestly kind of curious, and maybe they'll address it in the reboot or whatever. I wonder if they wind up together.
I want them to wind up together. Yeah.
There's a family we're not going to talk too much about, but the Wasana Songs, they are another Laotian family in the Hamlet County area, but they are very rich and well-to-do. And it's funny because the Wasana Songs want to have nothing to do with the Super Nuisance Phones, but then the Super Nuisance Phones are always trying to kiss their ass to, like, get ahead and whatnot, and they want Connie to start going out with and eventually marry their son, Chang Wasana Song. But she has, like, no interest in Chang whatsoever. She likes Bobby, much to their dismay, because they're like, oh, Bobby's white lump's not going anywhere. He's C students and he's not going to go to college. One day he's going to work at the dirt factory they mentioned and stuff. So, you know, they're not a big fan of that.
Yeah, I don't see, I do see Bobby and Connie at the end together, because they're so different, but Bobby brings out this fun side in Connie that she wants to express more. She can't express at home. And I think Connie helps Bobby become more studious in a sense. Not like he's making straight A's, but having him actually kind of be a part of school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is a good friend of Bobby and helps him become a better person in a lot of ways. In the same way, Bobby kind of helps loosen her up and make her more like a kid and not having to work all the time. So they are good, I guess, partners, if you will. And a lot of what I've seen them are, I would say that's one of my favorite relationships on the show. Granted, you know, they're high schoolers, or middle schoolers, rather. But seeing the Connie-Bobby relationship's always been a favorite of mine.
Yeah, I think, gosh, I love the episode where Bobby goes to high school, or they think he's like kidney mm-hmm. boy, and then he drags Connie into this, and it's just, I love having Connie around. She's a great character to have, and it gives the trio of Bobby and Joseph and Connie like this different dynamic that it needs.
Yep. And I think we have one more character to cover and we are good to go. And that is arguably, in my mind, the worst human being in the show based on his demeanor and how he treats people and the way he behaves. But for whatever reason, Hank loves him, and that's his boss, Buck Strickland. Buck Strickland was originally drawn, and you can actually tell it from the early episodes. He was drawn to be kind of a caricature of Lyndon Baines Johnson, but then it becomes less obvious in later episodes when they start doing the digital drawing and whatnot. He is the boss of Hank. He is known for being a business tycoon, if you will, within Arlen and Heimlich County. He owns a few businesses. He owns Strickland Propane, which I believe has four different branches. He also has Sugarfoots and a few other little businesses that he owns here and there and investments. He is married to Ms. Liz or Elizabeth Strickland, but he is not faithful in the least bit. That is a running gag on the show, is that he's always chasing women. He is always cheating on his wife. He is always cheating at everything. Like, he's seen cheating at golf. He's seen trying to cheat at cards and everything like that. He also is a compulsive gambler. He always goes to strip clubs and like empties, not entirely empties, but goes to the petty cash drawer at Strickland to get 20s out to take to the strip club. He is not a great guy, and it's clear. It's subtle, but it's clear that he's essentially using Hank in a lot of ways. Like, he knows that Hank is the kind of guy who values hard work and loves propane. So he can just stack him with a lot of extra work, and knowing that Hank will just deal with it because he's happy and he's pleased to do so. Even though, you know, realistically, he should be manager of Strickland Propane or something by now, but he's still assistant manager. Any interesting things about Buck Strickland for you?
Buck Strickland is that adventure we need in this show. He's going to take Hank on a crazy ride, but I think Hank definitely sees the flaws in Buck, because he mentions it a lot. Like, he knows, like, oh, we have to keep Buck away from this because he's going to get in trouble. Or I always like that. I think it's only in one episode, but he's like, man, why do I always have to be Buck's character witness in court? But I think it's because Hank respects Buck Strickland as a business person so much. And Buck is kind of that weird father figure that Hank really wants in his life. And that's where the loyalty comes from.
Yeah, that is a big part of it, because his actual dad, Cotton, was never a good dad to him, like, ever. We learned that a lot in the show. So I think he sees Buck as kind of his surrogate father figure. Yeah, and he's also not taking good care of himself. Like, he has a scar on his chest from when he's had a heart surgery and everything. And he's always drinking. He's gambling with other business people. And yeah, he's just he's a very interesting person. He's every once in a while, he does have his moments where he is not a good business person. Like, generally speaking, he is. He clearly owns successful businesses within Ireland. But then there's times where you can see that he's like cheating people out of propane or things like that. And so it's just, he's just a morally onerous guy. And it's just very funny how Hank pretty much worships him, despite Hank being kind of the straight and narrow guy who's just, he won't even record football on TV without the express written consent of NHL or NFL, rather. So, you know, and then you have this guy who's just like getting prostitutes and gambling and in like illegal betting parlors and stuff like that. So, well, anything you want to say to wrap this up before we let our friends go?
No, I'm really excited to get started with these episodes because then we get to truly dive into these characters.
Yes, we definitely wanted to just like set the stage so that everybody understood who we were talking about. But, you know, as we start talking about episodes, we will dive into these characters and their proclivities, the funny things they say and they do. So starting next week, we will start with our 50 countdown. They're not in any particular order because it is almost impossible to rank your favorite King of the Hill episodes. But we did find our favorite 50, and we will start that next week. Until then, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy. Bye.